You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You are with Mediators now here on Counterculture, and joining me now, as he does every week, is Marty Gibson. Hey, Marty, how you doing?
Good morning, Marie. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Well, I'm actually snuffleupagus because it is pollen season.
Oh, no.
Pollen, yeah, the pollen runs. The pine pollen comes in off the ranges and wafts down in delightful yellow clouds, and it started on the weekend. So I am snuffleupagus now for the next month.
Oh, that would be a bummer.
Yeah, the joys of living in the bay, really. But it's all good. Over the weekend, well, there's a lot happened over the weekend. And the first thing I think we're going to cover off, because we can't let this go, being a show about culture, is the bread and circuses, or the stale bread and the shitty circus, that unfolded in Paris on the weekend with the opening of the Olympic Games. Wow.
Yeah, they just love rubbing your face in it, don't they? That, you know, there's something every year. You know, the first one was kind of the hints at the COVID and stuff like that. And this year they've got the, you know, people doing that dance where they suddenly develop myocarditis and have, you know, die suddenly from, well, that's what it looked like, just suddenly drop down on the floor after vigorous exercise. Black Mass, that struck a lot of people as odd, didn't it? The gay Last Supper with a bit of pedophilia thrown in for good measure, and someone's balls hanging out. What was that all about?
Now, to be fair, I am going to say the balls hanging out weren't balls hanging out. When I saw that image, because I saw that pop up saying the sky's things are hanging out, I did look at the image. Now, being a woman.
How close did you get your nose to it before you could discern?
Did I put my nose up against the screen and closely inspect? What I can tell you is, being a woman who has worn tights, no, what that was a ladder in the tights. And when you have a ladder in your tights and you have a ladder in your tights in the thigh area, what then happens is that gets quite tight around the thigh. And you get a little bulge poking out. So I think you'll find that that was in a thigh. So I will disregard that. However, even though the organizer, whatever his name is, Charlie, want to get your rocks off, has claimed he was wanting unity and to bring things together. And it wasn't the Last Supper. It was the Feast of Dionysus. Barks like a dog. Wags like a dog, smells like a dog, is a dog dude, and you've just offended 31% of the world's population in the process.
Lucky you've offended the proportion that won't go and burn your embassies down and kill people. And I wonder if that is accidental or whether he deliberately chose to offend the less burny and rioty kind of religion.
Let's face it, you know, being French, you don't have to go back too far in living memory to remember Bataclan, to remember Je suis Charlie. I mean, they've got Charlie Hebdo. They know what happens if you poke the wrong bear. So they've gone and poked the pussycat instead. You know, at the end of the day, why did you need to poke it at all?
I mean, you know, the old horses of the apocalypse and all that sort of stuff as well. It's a strange thing, and it's easy just to pass it off as, oh, these guys seem very into pedophilia and Satanism. I guess it's just, you know, I don't know. They're very consistently into it, the old fat controllers. They love sneaking the number 666 into their logos, like CERN. The World Economic Forum's got one. There's reached a point where you've got to take that whole idea of hating God, you know, which is very much what Noah Harari,
Noah Yuval Harari, yeah.
You know, wanting to create human gods by joining them with machines. They really mean it. And we should start, you know, thinking about the implications of that, because it's not just some eccentricity. They really mean it.
I love the headlines. Now, firstly, I'm going to put it out there to everybody. I actually think it's fantastic that they did what they did. Now, it's not because I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it at all. Why I think it was good what they did is that there are now millions of people around the world who blissfully go along with their lives, really look forward to the Olympics, would have sat down to watch the opening ceremony and actually feel some patriotism. And I actually Tracy Watkins touched on this actually in her opinion piece over the weekend, and would have seen that spectacle and gone WTF. And that's good, because that then shows them, yeah, this is what they think of you. This is what they think you want to see.
Yeah. The media lovies gushing over the opening ceremony, you know, as I said, with drag queens and children gyrating on them in drag really did contrast with the public's reaction to it. And you just see this widening disconnect between the media and the people of New Zealand. You saw it on Facebook as well when Three collapsed, you know, just how many people were just so glad of it. And I think it's as if people are finally waking up to the fact that they are not the customers of these media outlets. They thought they were, but they're not. And the real customers are the Satanists who own the major advertisers. They're the primary customer. Mm. So that's how you have that disconnect that doesn't get fixed. Because if you've got a customer and they hate you, you better do something about it.
Yeah, one would.
They just keep pushing it. You know, you got one page, I think it was in the Sunday Herald, you know, one page says there's a terrible cold snap coming, and the other one says, oh, you know, climate change is going to kill the fish. It's becoming more and more incongruous, just the nonsense. They keep pushing it. It's almost to keep people a bit confused.
Absolutely. And I actually want to touch on something else on that in a second. However, I did pull out some headlines. I thought I'd just get a smattering of headlines. Chicago Tribune, drag queens shine at Olympic opening, but Last Supper, a taboo, draws criticism. First Post, an opening ceremony with a mix of awe, thrill and fear. NBC, drag queens dazzle in a display of inclusivity at 2024 Olympics opening ceremony. Fox Business, tech company pulls advertising after blasphemous opening ceremony. And my favourite One News here in New Zealand, Olympic opening ceremony, a heavenly hymn to sport and love. Oh, truth is lies, wow. Lies is truth, up is down, black is white. Yeah. Heavenly hymn, Marty. Really? I don't carry faith in even I could see there was nothing heavenly about that hymn, darling.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even need to be particularly Christian to just think that's kind of weird. And it does detract, especially, you know, they've always got to have that creepy interest in talking about sexuality to other people's kids. You know, kids watch it's something children are going to watch. It's the pinnacle of human accomplishment as far as, you know, whatever it is, running faster, higher, longer.
Hmm. Faster, higher, stronger together. I didn't see any faster. Well, I maybe saw a bit of high. I think things could have been a little bit of nose candy could have happened before that ceremony. But there was not a lot of stronger altogether, I thought. Again, the downside of all of this, I haven't used this word for ages, brouhaha, is the fact that there were also some really major gaffes that went on. I mean, the fact that there were massive delays. If you actually went to watch the spectacle live and in person, apparently it was miserable, pouring rain, massive delays for hours. The entire opening ceremony was designed for TV, not for an in-person spectacle, which I think is sad. I mean, the whole sort of bringing everybody together in a stadium, I think has some symbolism of the Olympic spirit, and that was not the case. You had the gaffe of both in English and French. They called the South Koreans the North Koreans. Oops.
That's going on a lot to us. That old Kamala Harris did that the other day.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Then they couldn't get the flame lit. I mean, and then the whole, like, handing over the flame at the end to come into Paris to two blokes. I mean, one of them was wearing a wig and a lot of makeup, but it was two blokes. Where's the man and the woman? I mean, that was, obviously, that doesn't exist anymore. And they raised the flag upside down. I mean, the whole thing was farcical. And that's even before you get on to all the people missing out because of the sabotage that happened in the infrastructure for the train lines. Blow me down with a feather yesterday, listening to a contributor based in France talking about the sabotage, and she used these words. First, she talked about it appears that sabotage was caused by a far-left extremist group. I nearly fell over. Far-left extremist group. And then later on in the piece, she said ultra-left extremist group. So the fact that there was an acknowledgement of apolitically where these people came from. So this says to me, climate nutballs. I mean, I don't know what that says to you, but that's what that said to me. But the fact that they cited that was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, well, if you take my code for left wing, which I use, it's people who want more government and less freedom. I guess far left or ultra left want no freedom and everything controlled by the government. And, you know, there are a few people like that.
Oh. And there's also too been a couple of journalists that have been tossed out because they haven't liked the commentary. Someone who reckoned they were waiting for the Australian female relay team, swim team, and they said something like, oh, they were taking a while to get to the podium. They said, oh, yeah, the girls are probably out there doing their makeup or something. So that got them turfed out. And then there was the Pole, the Polish journalist who made a comment about the opening ceremony. And when they got to John Lennon's Imagine, he said, this is a vision of communism, unfortunately, around some of the lyrics in Imagine. So that went down like a cup of cold sick. And so he was latest by the Polish broadcasting.
And ironically, he'd know. We should talk a lot more to people who've grown up in Eastern Bloc countries because they recognize a lot of what's going on. Mm. And of all the countries in the world, they're the ones who are least wanting to go back there because it sucks.
Yeah. Just staying internationally, speaking of up and down and black is white and front is back, the whole flip-flop, oh my word, I cannot believe it, around how all of a sudden Kamala is the great saviour. Man, have they gone to the Jacinda Ardern playbook of politics?
Yeah.
And the whole, I love that. Have you seen the clip about the border czar? And they can say, oh, no, she was never the border czar. She was never the border czar. And there's clip after clip after clip of leftward-leaning legacy media claiming how Kamala, the border czar, is going to fix the border.
Yeah, there's some even better clips of women being asked if they like Kamala Harris and saying, oh, yeah, I think she's got really good policies. And then they say, okay, name one. Oh, and just time after time, they can't name one thing she's done because she hasn't really done much. And there's that wonderful woman on Twitter or X who imitates her, and that's just been gold as well. There's, you know, say what you like about the collapse or apparent collapse of the West. It does generate some fantastic memes and comedy.
We're going to see a repeat, I think, of the 2017 prime ministerial campaign in this country sort of try and play out over there. I think they're hoping for that bump, and it will be funny to, will be interesting to see whether or not those undecided voters in the middle, where they'll go, and it's whether or not they, their hatred for Trump is greater for their distaste for Kamala. So who knows? And that's assuming she gets the nomination. I mean, the ink's not dry on that yet. So it may or may not happen. But look, the fact that Barack Obama had to swallow a hairy testicle to endorse her, I think it probably will.
I mean, did you catch Naomi Wolf's interview with Paul Brennan? Yeah, she's scared, man. She is at the stage where she knows that the map's unrolled and the knife's revealed and people are they're desperate and they're willing to kill people. So she's there's a few big gulps in that interview.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, the word coup is now being sort of creeping into the discourse. There seems to have been a coup in the US.
And then did you see the Venezuelan debacle a couple of days ago?
Yes.
And I looked at that and I thought, gosh, let's face it, we all know how corrupt things can be over there. And I mean, you've spent time there, you've visited there, but I looked at that and I thought, wow, is this going to presage what's going to happen in November?
Well, is that why we're seeing surveys, 75% of New Zealanders worried about a Trump victory and crap like that? They're just softening us up to not ask too many questions when there's election rigging. And if you look at Venezuela, I mean, the exit polls there, the opposition leader Gonzalez got 65% of the vote in the exit polls. Socialist dictator Maduro got 31%, right? And then the results are, the results from the election council, socialist dictator Maduro, he got 51.2%.
Benient.
Yeah, and then opposition leader Gonzalez, the exit polls say 65%. Computer says no, 44.2. And I wonder, you know, that shows polling shows Trump is neck and neck with Kamala Harris. I don't think they are. I think it's just they're saying it's close, so it's not so outrageous when that cackling, unelectable, deeply unpopular woman gets shoehorned in if she does. But, I mean, yeah, I've been to Venezuela. I was there in about, I think, 2004, And that was about, you know, if you look at the arc of Venezuela's journey, 1992, it was the third richest country in the Northern Hemisphere. 1992, 1997 became the second largest purchaser of F-150 trucks. 2001 voted for socialist president on the basis of income inequality was his big thing. Wanted some equality. Yep, then when I was there, there were private health care was being socialized. 2007, all higher education becomes free. So that's about where we were, I guess, with DL Eder, right? 2009, socialists banned private ownership of guns. We've heard that before. 2012, Bernie Sanders praises their American dream. 2014, opposition leaders are imprisoned. 2016, food healthcare shortages become widespread. 17, constitution and elections are suspended. 2019, unarmed citizens are massacred by their own government.
So when you unroll that map, it's obviously the plan from Venezuela that's been unrolled with the knife sitting on top, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you can see there is an arc to it, and the first part of the arc sounds eerily familiar.
Doesn't it just?
Yeah. But yeah, when I was there, the very full supermarket shelves, it was a great country. Was cruising around in a Land Cruiser, you know, one of those big 80 series Land Cruisers. Cost $10 to fill up. Go out and have dinner and quite a few drinks for about $5.
And of course, for people that may not realize, it was energy enrichment. It was the oil that made them so wealthy.
Yeah.
Primarily. And that's the thing. If you're energy independent or you have surplus, the wealth that's available is incredible. And I think that's something in this country, you know, where dear leader made that captain's call pretty much day one. It's hamstrung so many things here. The other aspect with all of that from a United States perspective, you're right, they're setting a stage. They're setting the platform now to see everyone's expectations of this is how it's going to roll out. But I know there were people worrying, you know, about where's RFK Jr. and all of this. And I know you and I have said this on the show before. If we were there, that's probably where our votes would go, only because that's where our hearts are. That's the little unknown quotient in all of this, is how many of those dissatisfied votes will he take away? But the other thing is that he's not on every single ballot.
Mm.
He can be a disruptor, I think, on some of the states that he's on the ballots in, but there's some states that he's not been able to get on the ballot.
Well, again, we moved to that Naomi Wolf interview with Paul. Her thing was there was that leak of, and again, this didn't make New Zealand's media, even though it's monumentous. There was a leaked, in inverted commas, conversation between RFK Jr. and Trump where Trump was questioning vaccines. And her thing was, well, I don't do that without agreeing on it. So what you've got there is a signal that Trump's making to his base who want him to denounce the vaccines that he's skeptical about it. He can't do that publicly because there are legal implications and he's being sponsored by drug companies to a certain extent, or, you know, there's some financing. But what it does signal is that RFK is going to play a role in his cabinet. Man, this could be really interesting.
Really interesting. And to that end, I'm going to be, for next week's show, Cam and I are going to get together and have a bit of a chew fat over some of this stuff. Because, of course, you know, there's a lot of little nuances there from a New Zealand perspective that we don't understand about the American political system.
Yeah.
And if for those that think, why is it that we're super pro-Trump? I'm not necessarily pro-Trump, but you've got to look at the reality of it. It is a two-horse race. It is a first, well, it's an electoral college. It's a very convoluted system over there. So there are lots of little different nuances to it, which is why you often, and you've had in several cases where the popular vote can go one way, but the electoral college, which votes for the president, can go in the opposite direction. There's loads of different little subtleties. And so we're going to talk about that next week on next week's show, which I think will be really interesting for people that want to get into the mindset to follow what's going on in the USA. That's going to come up next week.
Well, without breaking any confidences, I did get a series of messages with the lovely Olivia Pearson. She wanted to call me on my very damning cheap armchair psychologist trope that Trump is a narcissist. Fair enough. It takes a very unique person to do what he's doing, her thing was a narcissist would not have high functioning children who love him as much as his do, and wouldn't have two ex-wives who sought and maintained friendships with him. So that's true. I mean, and my reply was, and you know, we enjoy this kind of backwards back and forth. Mm. It's how we stop, you know, being in an echo chamber. We relish debate. So my thing was, you know, there are politicians who I just don't get the appeal of. I don't understand why Canada kept electing Trudeau, except for his hair. I never got the thing with Jacinda Ardern. Joe Biden gave me the creeps the moment I heard him talk. He sent a shiver down my spine. Now, I really like Donald Trump. I'm the greatest, you know. It's like, yeah, it's kind of theater. Probably a narcissist. Yeah, probably. You know, he's certainly a unique, very singular person.
Do you think culturally we've been groomed to not find disagreeableness or outspokenness or frankness as being positive traits?
I don't think it, Marie. I've been the victim of that tendency in the Kiwi character. I'm a lot more popular in Australia than I am in New Zealand for those very reasons. I make wrong jokes. I say, you know, things that are beyond the pale now and then.
It was shocker, really, do you?
Much less now I'm not boozing, I have to say. That's real. I fit in a lot better now. I'm not just sort of seeing those jokes just above the net and just coming with a big forehand smash and damn the torpedoes.
Mm. Having known you for as long as I do, I definitely know that there has been a softening in your serve.
Yeah, well, Matt McCartan actually said that in his interview with Cam Slater a couple of weeks back. He said, you know, everyone gets over here and they think, oh, the Kiwis are so lovely. And then after a while they realise we're not lovely, we're passive aggressive.
Dear leader, speaking of passive aggressive, it was just plain old aggressive aggressive. The Greens, man, I have to admit, if there is a gold medal for passive aggressive, maybe it was the Greens this week, because
principles,
there has been
power, principles, power, power, power.
I know, it's quite delicious, really. It is quite delicious. There's been a lot of articles, of course, around Darlene Tana, and of course, in KiwiFarm this today, I have taken quite a swipe at Darling Taker, as she is known. She's found her little, you know, someone's going to put Piggy in a corner, and she's in the corner now, and the husband, you know, the business is now in liquidation. And
but she's got the triple shield of sanctimony. She's got the tamoko on the chin, so she's, you know, she's part Māori, she's a Green, so she's, you know, got the self-righteousness that goes with caring about the environment. And she also goes by the pronouns they, them, so
she'll never be lonely. She'll never be lonely in that little corner by herself with those pronouns to keep her company, which is just so lovely. I looked at a number of articles and we can chat about them, but this morning, the best one, or yesterday morning actually, that dropped was from the Good Oil, from our dear old Cam himself, Woke Wombles at War with Each Other. And that was just a really good summing up of what has gone on. Chloe, what is it with the Greens and word salad? I know they've got their little vegan selves, but this word salad that they come out with, I have read articles, I've listened to interview. Man, that girl can take up a 5-minute soundbite and say sweet F-A.
Yeah. I've spoken before about the folly of thinking that young politicians bring some sort of freshness of thinking. They don't. They just bring aping of their older mentors. Remember when I had been a journalist for a while, I'd go back and read some things that I'd written and just think, oh, that's so verbose. And you just kind of go through that curve where you want to sound clever. And then you outgrow it. Or if you become a politician, you get kind of stuck there, and she's kind of stuck there.
Yeah.
Quite the nothing so complex that it can't be explained simply phase. She's, I'm going to show you how clever I am.
Yeah, indeed. So there's been a number of articles. One of them was in Wātea News. Now, the big thing, that they had their conference over the weekend in Christchurch, sans Darlene, and they were discussing, you know, what to do about Darlene. And they've always been famed for their very democratic process, the Greens, and they all get together and they like to vote on it. And of course, they now have this very, very hairy lozenge that they have to potentially swallow, which is, do they evoke a piece of legislation to oust Darlene out of her corner in order to get their next person in on the list, when, of course, that little piece of legislation they've vociferously opposed the entire time it's been around. The reason they have opposed it is because if they'd ever used it, the Greens would never have existed. I mean, the Greens were created out of a splinter from, what was it, the Alliance Party back in the day. It's a little bit crunchy for them. But of course, they're having to sort of weigh all of this up. As well as that, the other thing that has gone on is this little fracture that's been happening, this little schism that's been happening in there. I think it started around the very tragic passing of Professor Collins. But I think it could have even started prior to that with Elizabeth Kerikeri. So now you have within the Greens, you've got the three key Pacifica members of their caucus have resigned and stormed out of the meeting on the weekend. They were Alofa Aiona, which is the spouse of Elizabeth Kerikeri, Vasimaka Taviolo, and Marie Laufiso. So they've all bolted and they're just not happy. And they're, you know, citing essentially internal racism within the Green Party.
Hoisted on their own petard.
And then, I don't know about you, I just see this thing where you've always, have you noticed that whenever Chloe does a little presser these days, she always appears to be flanked by Tuiana Tuiono and Ricky Chihuahua Menendez March,
yeah,
as if to say, I'm not a racist, I'm not a racist, I'm here with my friends, yeah, I'm not a racist. It's like, oh, far out, was it, yeah.
Yeah, he's always nodding in like one of those dogs, you know, that they've got at the back of the car, you know, with as the car bumps along, the dog nods. Yeah.
Who's that, Ricky?
Projecto Gay Chihuahua.
Ricardo.
New Zealand. The Green Party's Mexican Ernesto Che Guevara. Nodding away, like, yes, this is, yes. And then there's the dude on her other shoulder.
Yeah. The thing that just stunned me with them, just thinking again from the bread and circuses and the stale bread and the circus sucks component. I mean, the circus doesn't suck because I'm finding it quite entertaining. They are still so solid in the polls. So they must have a fantastic communications arm. Oh, New Zealand Legacy Media, I forgot. Oh, they do. That gets to these people that think that they're okay. I mean, there was another article, I don't know whether you clocked it, you possibly didn't, about Golras Garaman finally meeting with Madeline Sainty, who's one of the shareholders of Scotty's Boutique.
Yeah, no, I've got that in front of me.
Oh, you got that in front of you? Yeah. And I mean, like, oh, Marilyn forgives her. Well, she's an old Green Party lovey from way back.
Yeah.
You know, so they just, I don't know.
They had Denise Roche saying, in my time in Parliament, I dealt with misogyny and racist hatred as a result of the campaign I was running to increase the refugee quota. And it's kind of like, maybe people just didn't want the refugee quota to be in. I think the difference in the more freedom, less government side of things is I'm happy to unequivocally say there shouldn't be threats of sexual violence or violence. I find it terribly distasteful and there's no excuse for it. And it actually takes our cause backwards. So you should stop. If you're doing it, stop. It's not helping. You know, vent to your friends, but don't, you know, stick to the point.
There definitely does seem an in-group, out-group situation going on with the Greens, because the other thing that happened was Julianne Genta. I mean, she broke massive amounts of protocol in the House and was threatening to another MP and cross the floor and yelled and screamed and carried on like a toddler having a tantrum.
Like she was in the fits of narcissistic rage, which she was.
Yeah, and then that's poof, yeah, like it didn't exist. Whereas you've got Kerikeri, who sent a few mean texts about Chloe, and, you know, she's out on her ass. And then we've got this with Darlene. And again, you know, not that report. I mean, what did we wait, 104 days or something for that report?
Yeah.
I can't remember, somewhere in that vicinity. And it really didn't say terribly much that most people in the media hadn't, or even just in day-to-day general, hadn't pieced together themselves. Oh, I don't know. They've got a lot on their plate.
Well, the stubbornness of that 12%, yeah, it is right. And This is another theme that's recurrent. You know, your more recent interview with your friend Josh Slocum, you know, brought it back. Those cluster B personality disorders. The fact that we're not talking about them all the time and talking about how some people just ain't right and they've ended up in positions of power in the media. And I think this Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse in Care, that's what those people were doing back then. They were finding roles where they had access to helpless women and children, and they were awful to them. And unfortunately, what that's resulted in is a reluctance to create places where kids can go when they're in terribly dysfunctional situations and they can be safe around the right sort of people to be doing those jobs. It's put us off creating those at all. And it's the same with Nationals, just woeful allowing what they're doing to still be called a boot camp. The only reason I can think that they do that is because some of their blue rinse brigade like that idea of being tough on these young whippersnappers. But if you read what's actually happening and what the plan is, there's a social worker dedicated to each child and whānau. It's not some dehumanizing boot camp. The problem that they're having, and just jumping all over the place now, but going over to Heather Duplessis-Allen's, raised this in her Herald on Sunday column, the problem that she's pointed out, which is a real problem, is a lot of these people who were abused in care, not all by any means, but a lot of those 200,000 people ended up going on to lead lives that are reflective of that terrible start in life. They joined gangs and did all sorts of terrible things to other people. And, you know, the idea of them getting significant payouts is not good. And so you could maybe go back a step, and there's another article about the addiction groups warning the government's mental health fund is too restrictive, where it says, drug and alcohol harm is estimated to cost New Zealanders $9.75 billion a year, but it's estimated the spend on the workforce at the coalface of addressing and preventing this harm is only around $124.6 million. That's how to square that circle. You've got to have a way of helping people back from some of the ways that they deal with that sort of stuff that have been terribly destructive.
What is documented in there, from what I understand from a few people in my back channels, it is literally the tip of the iceberg. So we know that there's a massive problem there, number one. We know that there's a massive problem. Duplessis-Allen talked about, you know, then of course there's this whole point of reparations. Can these people be compensated for what they went through? And that's the difficulty. Mm. Where do you draw that line? How do you put a dollar amount on something? And how do you then politically swallow the capital of actually then having to compensate somebody who's now gone on to a life in itself to perpetuate the cycle? And as you've just said, you know, how do you square that circle? So there's so many different things I don't think they can do it.
Well, the other angle is, and it's interesting that this is coming out, Brian Tamaki raising it, some of those people who were systematically abusing, raping, torturing these very vulnerable, often prepubescent children, were very high-ranking government officials, MPs, and people high in the clergy. So when you confront the resistance to addressing the problem, once you start pulling at that string, I mean, what else unravels? Mm-hmm. A lot of people just can't handle thinking about things like that. They can't handle thinking about child trafficking. They can't handle thinking, as I said, about those very dark people who live among us who are evil.
And then let's draw that thread now back to what we saw at the Olympics opening ceremony. That's the thread. You know, what we're doing to our children, it doesn't matter where it is.
Yeah.
What we're doing to our children is terrifying. You know, I just say to my boys all the time, you need to be thankful that you live in a home with two parents that love you deeply, with a wonderful group of friends, with people around you, because not every child in this country has that.
Yeah, I say that to my kids as well. Yeah, hey, not everyone gets this.
Yeah.
And some of the kids you're dealing with have got some real tough stuff going on. So you don't know what's going on for other people. But it gets us back to those real customers of our media. As I said, those Satanists who own the major advertisers or who do it through various private equity firms, you can read what they want. They want far fewer people on Earth. They openly say that. Some of them, depending on how openly psychotic they are, will say they want 90% less. They want less energy used by each person who they allow to live to become part of a serf class. They don't want you eating meat. They want central bank digital currencies so they can use to control your spending and movement. They want the freedom to inject whatever mRNA into you that might possibly alter the human genome. They want to control information available to you. They want to merge your mind with, as I said, with giant hive mind computers. This isn't theories. This isn't some way out wacko stuff. You can go to these organizations, World Economic Forum, that supplied us with their last two young global leader prime ministers. That's what they want. Most people can't hack even confronting that. And they're into some pretty weird stuff.
And it's funny you should say that with the eating meat. That's been one of the massive criticisms about the Olympics now that they've got going, is outside of the cardboard beds, which apparently rock hard in the village, most of the food, or a good portion of the food that's been served in the mess halls of the in the Olympic village, has been vegan.
Yeah, that wouldn't be any good.
No, well, not when you're a performance athlete, no.
That's a good opportunity for New Zealand to be marketing tasty lamb.
So from all accounts, I think Team GB apparently have gone off board in their own chefs and I think moved their catering to a nearby hotel, and plenty of other athletes I think apparently are hiving off in that direction. There was, who else did I read that had brought in their own catering because apparently it was so poor. Now, that to me, one of the things the French culturally are known for is the quality of their cuisine. There are so many things that if they wanted to represent not only the Olympic spirit, which, you know, they didn't, but also French culture, art, music, food, wine, their spirit of revolution, there are a whole bunch of things.
They've represented the spirit of revolution. They blew up the trains.
I
don't know if you've been to Paris. I mean, I haven't been there for 20 years or so, but the food that you get in your average cafe in Paris is not what.
But I mean, Paris doesn't represent all of France, though. I mean, it's a big country. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting that all of it just to me shows if they were wanting to represent the Feast of Dionysus, which he claims he does, all you've gone and done is had an Olympics opening ceremony that's gone and represented the decay of our current society.
Well, it was interesting that there was that massive Christian revival prayer the day after. Did you see footage of that?
No.
It was a massive thing with people singing. It was largely impromptu, apparently.
Was that in Paris?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, there's part of the human spirit that's kicking back against this. And a lot of those normies, it's getting gross enough for them. It's I don't know if you've ever been one of those meditation retreats. Your mind just goes so crazy until part of you just thinks, man, that's a bit out there.
Yeah, no, I have been to a meditation retreat, Marty.
Oh, it's a long 10 days.
Is there wine involved?
Oh, no.
Oh, you know, I've definitely not been.
Anything, you know?
I've definitely not been to a meditation.
It's actually at the end of it, you see this. It was one of those Vipassana retreats. They do them in prisons in some countries. I think that, yeah, we should be doing it in prisons here.
Just before we jump off, because I do want to get to Stephen Joyce before we go, I've been reading some stuff. There's a lot of stuff, I think, for that report that was tabled in Parliament this time last week. There's going to be a lot more that comes out from that. I'm definitely going to be interested to see where that goes and how this government's going to handle it. It is not going to be a short fix, this, at all. But I just hope that, because there are some people doing some really amazing work in this space. The late Celia Lashley, I know, did some incredible work. If you ever want to watch that documentary, it is the most moving documentary that you can watch. I read Celia's book when I was raising my sons, and it was just so informative. And that sort of approach, particularly for helping young men, I think, is something that we should be adopting and we haven't been. The work that Brian Tamaki, love or hate him, and, you know, there are some people out there, particularly in the mainstream, really are not fond. But you know what? As Di Landy often says to me, deeds not words, Marie, deeds not words. And I look at Man Up and legacy programs that they've been running and the success that they've had with those that have been working really well. Those are the sorts of roadmaps that we need to be looking at to help fix this. It's not going to be a quick fix. And, you know, without that, we're just not going to, all we're going to do is go around in circles and be having this conversation 10 years from now.
Well, once you have children, I think if you do it right and you're lucky, you do get that universal tenderness towards other children. And you just think, oh, you didn't deserve that. And it goes on when you see adults who have had a bad start in life and they're in trouble. You just kind of see the child in them and think, you deserve better than that. Every child deserves a fair shot at making the most of themselves. So, I get very annoyed when we're divided and we don't go straight to those parts of the Zipa consensus as a primary thing. And I've spoken to people who, you know, were gang members who got, you know, arrested for some petty thing and then put into some borstal system and it just stuck with them forever and they couldn't get away with it. So they just ended up hanging out with the other kids who were in that situation. And that's the frustration I have with Christopher Luxon saying, I'm going to crack down on gangs. You know, it's not an excuse, it's an explanation. And I think that if you can do a bit of work on the inner child with those people and say, yeah, you didn't deserve that, but, you know, your children don't deserve where you're pointing them now either. Let's break that cycle.
Before we go, Stephen, let's actually just quickly do the Simon Wilson, the review piece from the Saturday Herald, because that's the difficulty, as you were saying, you know, in terms of, I mean, a lot of this problem and a lot of the people most affected in that report that came out was Māori. They were overrepresented in that report. The review was, are we ready for the treaty debate in 2024? Well, you're thinking, we're saying, what's the connection there? Well, it's all of it. I mean, it is this relationship that we have as New Zealanders between ourselves, whatever makeup we are as New Zealanders, between those who are Pākehā, those who are Māori, those who have come and immigrated, there is a great huge makeup here. And how do we take that relationship to get the best out of our lives in this beautiful country that we live in? I was really impressed with this piece. It's very in-depth. There's lots to take out of it. It's called Are We Ready for This? The Treaty Debate in 2024. The Treaty of Waitangi debate is about conflicting values. Can we line them up? Ask Simon Wilson. He starts with the Kite Premier, Craig Jepson, and his partner, who were dressed actually in 1804 English settler costumes for Waitangi Day to actually sort of represent the values of everyone that's there. And then, of course, we now have this huge debate between the two versions, the English and the Māori, of the treaty. What version is the correct version? What's recognised? One faction recognises this, another faction recognises that. How do then we reconcile all of these things for this togetherness? There's a lot of waka paddling from people that are wanting to paddle to their own agendas on both sides of the debate. Mm. And I thought Wilson covered, you know, all the different sides of the debate quite beautifully. And
yeah, it was actually, I normally get a sinking feeling in my stomach before I read anything that Simon Wilson writes, but included other voices. And that's what's been missing from it, people being able to say things without being called racist. And I've often said it's what Māori, I think, feel experiences racism in this space is rather the visceral reaction that people with a proud history of abolishing slavery and deposing tyrants have when someone talks to them like they're a slave or seems to aspire to being a tyrant. And I mean, in the Weekend Herald, there was the government acts to upend ruling on Māori marine rights. So there's a lot going on, and it's like, okay, well, they've opened that up, and now there's a claim on every bit of the New Zealand coastline at $500,000 a claim. I think it's something like 300 of them, right?
Oh, so I think try 600, and a lot of them are overlapping.
Yeah.
Muriel Newman is the one person that's done the biggest amount of work on that, I do know. So, and she's been at the forefront of fighting that. So, if the, she's done an interview with Paul and with Cam, I think, on this as
Yeah.
well. Yeah.
So you've got no show without Punch, Old Te Pāti Māori MP for Te Tai Tonga, Tākuta Ferris, said many Māori would already feel threatened by the government's recent legislative moves, such as the repealing of Section 7AA from the Oranga Tamariki Act, Māori Wards, and the Treaty Principles Bill. And this was just another grenade, says the guy who's got posters with guns in them. So they're always doing what they're accusing.
Well, it's interesting you could say that because, like, again, with the Simon Wilson thing, he said when Jepson turned to arrive 2 months later to Waitangi after being mayor, when people get used to preferential treatment, equal treatment seems like discrimination. It's a famous quote by Thomas Sowell, an American economist and public affairs commentator. Sowell, who was black, is celebrated in conservative circles for his opposition to the civil rights movement. He's now 94 and has always been opposed. He disputes the existence of systemic racism and thinks Donald Trump was a better president than Barack Obama. Sowell made his seems like discrimination statement while supporting the removal of affirmative action programs. His point, when people of color are used to getting some kind of advantage, such as reserved for them in colleges, they can feel picked on if it's taken away. The statement is a favorite among Hobson's Pledge followers. Others use it to say the exact opposite. By their reading, the people who get preferential treatment in our society are Pākehā. This advantage is not so normalised, they say, that many Pākehā don't even know what's happening. Now, what we've got going on right there, critical race theory 101.
Yeah, and he also says it like, he's saying, oh, he supported Donald Trump, like it's going to be garlic to a vampire, doesn't he? Rather than because he's believing that New Zealand survey that says 75% of people are horrified.
If you're a listener and you've never heard of Thomas Sowell or Thomas Sowell's writings or any of his quotes or interviews, he's a very quiet, private man. He is brilliant, seriously one of the greatest thinkers of our modern age. And I saw an interview, a fairly recent interview, it's a few years ago, with Dave Rubin. And Thomas Sowell started out his life politically as a Marxist. He really liked the idea of Marxism and communism. And he was asked by Rubin, you studied this, you agreed with a lot of these philosophies. He's an economist by training, worked in the public service in the United States. And he said, what solved you of this notion around Marxism? He just simply said, the facts.
Yeah. There's a quote in here. A year earlier, the then deputy leader of the Labour Party, Calvin Davis, Ngāpuhi, suggested there was a simple way to understand te tiriti. It's kāwanatanga and rangatiratanga working together to achieve equity. There's that word, equity. Calvin, you can't have equity between children in a family. There's that old adage, if men are free, they're not equal, and if they're equal, they're not free.
And the quote that presaged that particular one was, "We want to go back to delivering Māori in their great number with things that they do want, which is first world wages, a decent education for their children to take them as far as they can go, access a health system which is affordable and immediate, and a decent, affordable home, which is what Māori want." I would have thought that that's what Māori would want. Shocker. And that was Winston Peters. And he said that on the campaign trail in 2023. It is finding that sort of connection. How do you pull these things together? And I know the story's come about primarily because the principal treaties bill that has been proposed by ACT is sort of going through. Luxon has, I think he said he will let it go through the first reading, but they're not going to support it beyond that. It's certainly sparking a debate.
Well, and it should. And yeah, I mean, at some point, we have to move beyond that Green Party white cringe and fear of Māori anger to sort of say, hey, some of this is your fault, not all of us, not all of it. Some of it's the fault of people who came before us. But I think most New Zealanders are pretty open-minded and want to see better results for our kids, certainly. And I think Te Pāti Māori are to blame for a lot of the reluctance non-Māori now have to open their hearts to Te Ao Māori. They've been too charmless, unprincipled, racist, grasping, aggressive, threatening, self-pitying, and generally irresponsible to make anyone but the most fawning, submissive, and masochistic think that giving them more power is anything but a terrible idea. They've set their movement back 40 to 50 years, I think.
Oh, gosh, I know. Look, you can't... The fact that they're called Te Pari Māori, you cannot, that there is no relationship between the modern iteration and what was created by Tariana Turia and Dr. Peter Sharples. None whatsoever.
Yeah. And Marxism is the colonization that dare not speak its name.
Yeah. It is a poison that has seeped its way into this Māori political sphere. I don't know how you excise this poison, but it can only be, I think, Māori that excise it, and I think a lot of them want to excise it, but they need to speak up, and they need to speak out, and not enough are doing it. Because, as you're right, because the division, they claim, oh, it's Seymour and his policies and Luxon that are driving this division. It's like, really? Really?
You know, the thing in that article that I loved was that... was Craig Jepsen and his wife Jeanette joining Waitangi Day celebrations wearing colonial settler costumes? I had this fantasy of getting a Poverty Bay militia uniform made and going to Te Matatini in it, because there's a militia uniform in the museum there which belonged to my great-great-great-maybe-great-uncle, Thomas Duran. I think he got fired from the militia because he was a beekeeper and had some beekeeping activities that needed to be done, so he didn't turn up. But and you know, they were good friends with Te Kōti, so you know, their heart wasn't really in it in terms of fighting for the crown. They were kind of friends with local people, but yeah, I always thought that would be a good conversation starter.
Yes, indeed.
I'd even like to turn up, you know, see if some of them let me in on the act. And
Right. I want to move across before we do feedback to Stephen Joyce, because the Health New Zealand merger mess has now been the highlight from him. A lot of highlighter for me was expelled on this. Of course, the Health New Zealand board has been dumped. Professor Lester Levy is now in charge as commissioner. And it was funny, I pulled this out this morning and I was reading it before we got started here, and Mr. Murray looked at it and he... Because Miss Murray's quite tapped out of any legacy media, and he's sort of rather oblivious with a lot of things going on. And he sees the photograph of Lester and he goes, oh, I know him. And I said, oh, yeah, well, he's the new health commissioner. Oh, no, he's all right. He turned Manukau Hospital. Oh, no, he turned Manukau around. No, I remember him. I worked around him when he was working as a doctor in Auckland back in the day. So, yeah, you know, he's pretty.
Dinner at our place in Gisborne. He did a lot for my old man. And Mile Man speaks very, very highly of him. He said, he said of this article, because I asked him what he thought of it, he said, excellent article by Stephen Joyce. You should be made Lester's deputy. Lester is without doubt by far the most intelligent and capable manager in the New Zealand health system. But the most significant quote from him, he will make the best of things with the cards he has been dealt. He needs the full pack. I doubt he's been given it. But Yeah, you do think. I mean, there was the big brouhaha, as you like to say, about agonising by Fran O'Sullivan about, you know, maybe some of these directors will get put off working for the government. There's a big difference between reforming and just keeping a ship steering straight. Ideally, the reforming comes from the government. Well, as Stephen Joyce said, ideally it shouldn't be done in one of those big centralised things anymore.
Yeah, well, let me just read the opening paragraphs of this to set the stage. Three key changes needed to right the ship to put a focus on care. The replacement of the Health New Zealand board with a commissioner is the sad yet entirely predictable outcome of one of the most ill-conceived organisational mergers this country has ever seen, and ironically one of the most important sectors we have. Former Health Minister Andrew Little's lament this week that reform shouldn't be this hard underlines how little he knew about the ill-starred task he was taking on. As a merger, it was of a gargantuan scale for New Zealand and overly complex in a world terms. Merging 20 separate organisations with 80,000-odd staff in one big bang restructure was courageous, as they say, or more aptly ridiculous. I don't claim to be a merger specialist. I did consolidate about 8 or 10 radio companies over 7 years ago in the 1990s. But what was minuscule compared with what has been taken on here? Nevertheless, experience taught me the challenges of merging cultures and systems and the importance of taking people with you. It highlighted how vigilant you had to be to stop bureaucracy and empire building in the new organisation spiralling out of control and snuffing out initiative and innovation on the front line. All the feedback from within Health New Zealand is the empire building is rife and the internal politics have been fierce, not just within the organisation, but between the new agency and the Ministry of Health. Now, I read that out to Mr. Murray this morning. He left the DHB system in 2016, I think it was. Part of the reason was the empire building and the competition within the bureaucracy, in the machine as it was at that time. He's still got a lot of very good friends who are in the machine, and apparently it's a lot, lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, you might not have caught this, but on Friday, Matthew Hooton wrote an article about capital bureaucracy, now bloated fourth-rate PR firm. And he was basically saying there's just a culture of ministers say that asking senior officials for new ideas to lift productivity or anything else generates blank stares. When junior officials blurt out something innovative in front of ministers, their superiors ensure they never again darken the beehive's door. Yeah, he's basically saying that Christopher Luxon's Brains Trust now recognises that radical personnel and, most importantly, cultural change is needed in Wellington to stop his being the third consecutive government to preside over decline. So, yeah, he's talking about the way things are seen almost entirely in a political, how will this play in the media way, rather than a let's give taxpayers value for their money and provide,
And the difficulty that Luxon has is, unlike Dear Linda, unlike Jacinda, she had an ideological roadmap. So she was governing based on her ideological roadmap. So when you've got that, it's as good as gold. Because damn the torpedoes. I mean, the taxpayers, they don't mean anything because you've got an ideological roadmap. It's all about me, darling. So that's what she was doing. And I heard, was it a couple of days ago, I mean, she was, you know, fond of a bit of a quiet tantrum, like something along the lines of $33 million in a shelled IT cloud project for MFAT because she tossed her toys because she couldn't get a proper Teams meeting up with world leaders. And that's what it led to. But anyway, I digress.
There's going to be so much come out about that time.
Well, this is the squealers lost millions. And I mean, this is where this Health New Zealand merger mess is coming from. I mean, in the merger, when they've clumped it all together, they can't find $130 million a month that is going missing. Well, being overspent, it's not gone missing. It's just whoosh in the ether and it's not getting to where it needs to go. So they're having to unravel all the spending and decisions made during that ideological process. Now, what I do love about Stephen Joyce is he will outline the problem, and then he always provides a solution, bless his little heart.
And you can hear it in his laconic voice.
You can. First, we need to flatten the structure, eliminate the layers of bureaucracy, and bring management back close to the front line. That means a chief executive for each hospital. Stop it. That's sounding decidedly old-fashioned, Stephen. Someone who can walk the wards, speak with the doctors and nurses, see what's happening, and respond as required. Your father would remember the days that's how it used to be.
Well, you know, I've mentioned, I think, a few shows back, talking to a doctor who'd been in A&E and just was astonished at how little was going on. Said, I was sitting there, I was thinking, give me a name badge, I'll sort this out. That kid needs antibiotics, he's got a sore ear. That, you know, just ran through the list of people and said she saw there were two doctors on and maybe two or three patients seen in an hour.
Yeah, it's because of those layers, the 14 layers between the chief executive and the patient. Secondly,
and it creates a problem in the frontline staff as well, because, you know, someone who's had a job that whose profit depended on how fast people move their hands. I'm very sensitive in cafes and hospitals to hand speed. It's a major difference in how fast things get done. And often there's this slow movement where people are second guessing themselves the whole time, because what they're focused on is not so much the task, but explaining and justifying and ticking boxes on the task. There's a lot of initiative just sucked out.
And that, though, comes, this is this whole butt-covering accountability culture, right? When you have the threat of firstly the HDC and then latterly your license being taken away for doing something that you may or may not be right or wrong in doing, you have this overt caution that just slows everything up. Like, there is no, as you said, no hand speed, no dynamic action going on, because you're terrified of constantly falling foul, a complaint being made, someone being cited, upset, offended, and that then creates a whole series of hurt.
Mm.
It's not a healthy culture to be in. I mean, it's part of the reason why Mr. Marie left.
It's quite a contrast with what was going on in those homes that we're now having this commission report over. You can't help but think there's got to be a midpoint between where we are now and where we were then.
Mm. I'll just carry on with it quickly, Joyce's solutions. The other one that I found very interesting is separating out health funding decisions from operating decisions to get a better balance between primary care and hospital care. A big mistake was made when responsibility for allocating funded shifting from the government agencies to the hospital-dominated district health boards. Naturally, they favour giving more money to hospitals and comparatively less to primary care, which means more people are delayed in their health care to a point where they need hospitalisation. The GPs have been screaming about this for decades.
Well, I've seen that in play as well. You know, the GPs building a new primary care facility, and part of what makes it work is that they can bring on a sonographer service, and the little czar who's in charge of the district health board buys a machine for $250,000 so he can compete with the bid, then loses it and the machine's stuck there not doing anything.
Mm.
I've seen many stories like that. And what's really funny is that he then asked the GP in question who was developing this for some sort of reference or something. This guy was like, you've got to be kidding. You screwed me and you don't even understand that's what you did. Because they're not playing with their own money. They're playing with squealers' billions.
Exactly. And they wonder where this money is disappearing. The last point, he said, finally, we need to train a lot more doctors more cost effectively. And that means breaking the fat, happy university duopoly that are the Auckland and Otago medical schools. This has been overdue for some time. Not achieving it while I was tertiary minister is one of the regrets of my political career. It's really, what I love the fact is training more doctors here locally as opposed to importing them, because that's been the solution up until now. I mean, if we didn't have foreign trained doctors in this country, we will literally be up to Tai Creek without that paddle.
It doesn't take much to make New Zealand a less attractive destination. And once that happens, we're in trouble.
Hmm. Yeah, we are in trouble. He does finish things off. There's one more thing. We should quietly bin any further reviews which suggest that the solution to any of the sector's problems is a grand merger of all the operating entities. It clearly hasn't worked for Polytechs or the health centre. God forbid we try anywhere else. So yeah, that is certainly worth hunting out Stephen Joyce, How to Rescue New Health New Zealand After the Merger Mess, from Saturday's Herald.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what else gets a super manager to clean it up. I mean, the obvious thing was Kāinga Ora. Yeah, I think that sense of urgency is tough for people to get with the media so used to suckling at squealers' billions and going along with it and not questioning it.
Well, and it's like what he said in the article, the Simon Wilson article, with the Thomas Sowell quote, when you've had advantage and advantage has been taken away, you can feel discriminated against. When you've had squealers' billions and squealers' billions are now taken away, it can feel like you've been disadvantaged against.
Yeah, and the government are being big meanies.
Yeah. Righty-ho. We have feedback.
Woohoo!
Woo! Oh, this first one. So there's a little bit of stuff around the Trump interview that I did with Trevor. I know you caught that. Lone wolf, you were kidding me. No, I'm not kidding you. I actually think that this kid was weaponized. Now, do I think that there were authorities that parted the Red Sea to allow this kid to go through and do what that he did without being hindered? Absolutely. But, you know, I think that boy's just as much of a victim as anybody else, to be quite honest. Read the shooter. He's MK Ultra. Everything's a stage. False flags galore. The world's a pantomime. Nothing as it seems. You are quite right. This is bread and circuses, and the bread is stale, and the circus sucks. Hi, Marie. Great discussion with Trevor Loudon. Thanks to you and your team for your efforts. Regards, Peter. Thank you, Peter. Hi, Marie. It was excellent, and Trevor is such a knowledgeable guy. In particular, I totally agree with his view on the American patriotism. I've been there 3 times now, and I can confirm that compared to the Americans, us Kiwis aren't patriotic at all. As for the speculation that these illegal immigrants, some of them are CCP, are planning to launch attacks on Americans, if it's true, I doubt they realise what they're in for. There's a famous story of a Japanese thinking of the invasion of the USA at the start of the Second World War, but decided the locals were armed to the teeth and it wasn't worth the risk. Well, fast forward to 2024, and if you think they were armed then, it's quite another story today. Overall, it's really good to see a revival of patriotism over there. While Trump isn't flawless, show me a politician who is, never a true word, it is time to have him in the White House and have a complete purge of the civil service, and that will have repercussions around the world. And that's from Jan. Morning, Marie. I know that this is an interview from last week, but just on the subject of the attempted assassination on Trump, TV One Breakfast Show was just discussing they were acting like 12-year-olds reenacting the shooting with a toy. It's shockingly stupid and pathetic. I sent up my suggestion comments to them. One, grow the bleep up, and have a great day. Thanks, T.
Bye.
What have we got here from John? Clinton and the deplorables, mail under the rivers of the filth, New Zealand moving towards the US, and the left's disparaging the majority. Regards, John. That's in regards to the fourth estate that I did. Marie and team, I do believe and happily stand corrected. Grab her by the cat was requested by a woman, not the Donald. Not many hetero men would refuse such a request. I do agree with your point that it is irrelevant. That's from Tracy. This one here, sorry folks, I have to turn off your Trump worship. It's sheer ignorance. You should try and be more balanced on RCR and don't compare Winston to Trump. That's the last short store goodbye for now. Donna, do come back, because, I mean, we don't worship Donald Trump. You know, he is one of the leading contenders, and we do need to talk about him. And as you said, the discussions that we had, you had quite a good discussion with Olivia, who has more positive reviews or more positive feelings on Trump than we do. But, you know, he is a politician, and he is could quite possibly be then re-elected as president. So we need to discuss. Oh, for Mike. Hey, Mike. Good. We love you, Mike. Just caught you this morning with the replay of the Fourth Estate. I must just say I'm glad I did. It was the best one I've heard. Oh, thanks, Mike. I could listen to Rachel Stewart talk all day. She's a truth speaker and a younger person like yourself with real life skills. I really like her point of view, and I think she needs to dip her toes back into the political pond and bring some of her stoic, formidable self to the fight. Great show. And again, I'm glad I caught it this morning.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Harris's father was Jamaican and her mother was Indian, hardly a person of colour from George. That was in regards to our conversation last week around Kamala Harris.
Her father was a pretty hard-out communist as well.
Oh, the dad.
One of those red diaper babies that you hear about.
Another one from Media Matters. The excellent show came in late. Definitely worth the reply. And here, oh gosh, there's a whole heap here on Media Matters. Hold on, I'm going to have to zoom on. As individuals, most immigrants are great people. My partner is one. At least half my good friends are. Some of my grandparents were Brits after the war, but as a mass collective, sadly, it's diluted in our good old #8 Kiwiwa culture. I mean, how do you define a New Zealander these days without being called racist? Then again, maybe it's a good thing that the only race is the human race. It's cultures which have caused a lot of the division, along with things like money, organised religion and politics. I suspect we were a bit more advanced in the past than our history lessons tell us, but something big has happened which has caused pockets to become isolated and form these cultural differences. We're only now really reuniting together with things like modern air travel and the internet. The problem lies with small groups wanting to control the majority. Those are my thoughts. Have a nice day. From Nick. Thank you, Nick. And it was in regards to a comment that you and I had around mass immigration, the tool to break up the nations, which was a clip that was on social media. Now, Aroha was in here. I don't know whether, did you see that? She made a comment on here. I feel you may have one Māori friend who said that it's definitely not great. And I know that the team sort of bounced backwards and forwards with that. Aroha, we have, believe both Marty and I, do have more than one Māori friend, and we do have more than one Māori friend who does share these concerns. And I have Māori whānau, and I've got whānau on both sides of the fence on this, don't get me wrong. I had some quite lively debates with a cousin of mine around my view of the world and where I see things. And you know what? And this is one thing that she always says to me. She loves the debates, and we agree to disagree quite often. And as she said, our line is whānau, whānau, tātou, tātou. Family is family. We're not just sort of spouting this and plucking things out from the air. We do have an understanding of what's going on. We're both raised in an area where it's just as many Māori as there are non-Māori living in that area, and I still have family there. You still have family there. We both visit there frequently. We talk to our friends and whānau in that area, and we form our opinions based on that. So, look, it's always hard because we fall into echo chambers from time to time, but we all do that. We all do that, and maybe, you know, you may need to look at your little echo chamber and actually realise that there are a lot of Māori people out there who would choose to say nothing than cause a debate within families over some of these issues.
Yeah, it's very dangerous if people can't say what they think because they'll get told they're racist, because then they say it behind.
Yeah, or they get told by ones like the girl from that you've got, was it Tainted Blood? She said in the house, you know, I mean, those sorts of accusations hurt and can tear families apart. So you've got many people in families that choose to say nothing. So 2057, of course, is the text number. Inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email if you want to send us some feedback. Have you got anything else to part with before we go, Marty?
Not really. Yeah, it's interesting how all the little whirlwinds that are going around the place, and I suspect a lot will have happened by the time we talk again next week. So thanks, Marie, for having me, and have a great week, everyone.
Yeah, have a great week, and don't disappear, of course. I've got my final thoughts coming up very, very soon, and the wonderful Natalie Cutler-Welsh will be along with Up Your Brave after 1 o'clock. All that and more here on Reality Check Radio. Thanks, Marty.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.